So I'm Mike McCafferty, you know that. And this is my podcast slash video. You can watch it on the Facebook page. I've tried to do some live video. That was kind of a bit of a disaster a couple of days ago. And I've been kind of slowly plodding through Star Trek to the Wrath of Khan. And my next installment was going to be about the making of, the basically the gestation of it, the development of the script and their, you know, how it came together and all the different misfires and misdirections it went. And then it was 2 days ago, yesterday actually, when theringer.com, which is a website I like to go to, they have good articles, and Bill Simmons created it. I've been following him since he was Grantland. And I, in general, I enjoy their commentary on both sports and on pop culture, came out with this article here. And if you're looking at it on the podcast, on the video, you can see the title is Star Trek, the Motion Picture is the best film for non-Trekkies. Tim Grieving, who I don't know directly, but I know him through friends, I believe, wrote this fairly long article here, basically making the case that Star Trek, the motion picture is a much maligned by Star Trek fans and misunderstood by Star Trek fans. And that in fact, it's much better than people give it to be. And you know, I grant if you enjoy the film, that's fine. But to say it's the best of the bunch to watch if you're not a Trekker, not a Trekkie, it's just wrong. And as I pointed out on the Facebook page, I said, this is sort of like, bargain hunting for kind of the retconning of this film. You already heard my long breakdown of what I feel about this film. And I feel the film is plotting and long and has just immensely long passages, which the characters are out of character. There's wonderful special effects. Jerry Goldsmith's music is sublime and beautiful, but it's this kind of lost, this piece of entertainment, which is lost, which in itself is traveling through a cloud, through the V'ger cloud, unable to find any moorings in and of itself, unable to find the characters which we grew to know and love in the, you know, 77 episodes of the original series, and unable to move forward through the motion picture in and of itself. Through either character or story, as I said before, it was written on the fly, on set. And so I took great umbrage with this, and I posted on the Facebook page, and people were kind of going back and forth, says, well, you know, I kind of like it, I kind of don't like it. And that's fine. I don't have any issue with that. But then I started thinking, why is this so flat? What is something I'm missing about it? And one of the things I'm missing to a great degree is the comedy. And I talked about this actually in the podcast. There's only three real jokes in this. So I decided to apply that against Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, you know, which built upon it, but did it build upon the comedy? Were they able to take lessons from the negative space of comedy in Star Trek, the motion picture, and find bits of comedy? And so, yes, I believe it did. And so here, I'm going to go through, first of all, the motion picture's three honest, earnest jokes, and then compare that with Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Now, my rules on this are a little bit fast and loose. Comedy is comedy. But in general, it's stuff which is intentionally funny. For example, in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, I don't flag Kirk screaming Khan, because within the show, that is him having a genuine moment. In fact, he's actually overselling the moment in order to sell it to not only Khan, but also to the audience. In some ways, from a meta standpoint, from a, you know, looking inside, looking kind of breaking the fourth wall and looking inside of it, the audience laughs and thinks it's a great overreaction, an overreaction by William Shatner, where in fact it's a brilliant piece of acting and direction by Nicholas Meyer, because we saw that Nicholas Meyer can get a much better, much more nuanced acting turn from William Shatner with Here It Comes. He knew how to dial him down. And so they overplayed it so that both Khan and the audience would think this is so bananas. We're not even going to think that maybe Captain Kirk was doing this all along. In fact, he was going by the book and tricking both Khan and the audience. So I'm going to put that one aside and instead just kind of go through and try and break down all the different instances of comedy. And let's see what we can find about that. So with the motion picture, we've already looked at this stuff before, but here's the first instance occurs at the 31 minute 30 second mark when McCoy beams aboard.
Well, for a man who swore he'd never return to the Starfleet.
Just a moment, Captain, sir. I'll explain what happened. Your revered Admiral Nagura invoked a little-known, seldom-used reserve activation clause. In simpler language, Captain, they drafted me.
They didn't.
This was your idea. This was your idea.
Okay, so aside from the kind of unintentional physical comedy of DeForest Kelly wearing this bonkers 70s jumpsuit with full hairy chest and medallion and big ass belt buckle.
In simpler language.
We get the punchline, they drafted me, which is a good punchline. It's a good character defining moment, a punchline there. So that one's good. I don't have any problem with that. That's actually a funny moment. And then it's followed up by Kirk having a little more comedy there and then getting to the real meat of the scene, which is that I need you. And then, of course, McCoy responds, yes, of course, I'm there for you. The second one, we also flagged this right around here after kind of morose Spock shows up here. Black emo cloth.
Log Mr. Spock's Starfleet commission reactivated. List him as science officer.
This weird dual shot here.
Effective immediately.
Mr. Spock.
Well, so help me, I'm actually pleased to see you.
And then, so that's a funny line. Well, so help me, I'm actually pleased to see, which calls back to character between the two of them. We know the relationship, we know their banter, and we're excited. As an audience, we're excited. I remember being in the theater, people laughed at this, and then what do we get? Is we get goofy Spock looking so sad and so emo, and everything just melts away, and any comedy that we had is completely gone once again. We will leave this comedy until the 2 hour and 5 minute mark, until the very end of this very movie. And once again, I mean, I'm giving you this as a reference here.
4 days, Mr. Spock?
Unnecessary, Mr. Scott. My task on Vulcan is completed.
Mr. Sulu, ahead warp one.
Warp one, sir.
Heading, sir.
Out there. That-a-way.
Out there, that-a-way. The audience laughs. And that's the end of the damn film. 2 hours and 6 minutes and you get three jokes. It's not enough. It's not enough to support this film. And that was part of the problem. There isn't any humor. If you go to the Marvel films now, and again, Kevin Feige is a big fan of Star Trek. You see that he inserts comedy in these films. He makes sure that every few minutes we get a good joke line. Sometimes too much. Sometimes it's too joke and you're like, is anyone taking this seriously? Like the destruction of half of the universe? Is this funny? I'm not sure. All right. So with that, let us now switch over to Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. Let's get to the actual meat of all this. And let's get to...
2 hours. Are you ready?
Right on.
Let's get to what I have here. All right. So the first real piece of comedy we get is 7 minutes into this. We're already off to a great start because whereas before it was 30 minutes of people staring at screens and people looking concerned. This starts out with a bang, literally, with the destruction, the fake destruction of the Enterprise. And then we follow that up with Kirk dressing down Lieutenant Savick.
Admiral, that thought had not occurred to me.
Well, now you have something new to think about. Carry on. It's at least as important as how we deal with life, wouldn't you say?
As I indicated, Admiral, that thought had not occurred to me.
Well, now you have something new to think about. Carry on.
So in this moment, Savick is questioning the value of the Kobayashi Maru. Keep that in mind. And Kirk sort of dresses her down and explains that you are young, you don't understand this. And he kind of lightly says, now you have something to think about. We could have handled this line a couple different ways. He could have been like a hard ass, well, now you have something to think about, and marched off. But instead, they attached a lightness to it. So this is in the delivery more than the actual line. But what this does is it begins to establish character for Kirk again. It begins to get that fun that we so deeply missed in the first movie. We only saw it the very last minute, literally the very last minute of the film. Now we're seeing it in almost the first minute of him showing up. This kind of falls.
Admiral, wouldn't it be to me?
We follow that up almost 20 seconds later, where Kirk's walking through through the simulator. He's walking out of the simulator. He sees Spock.
Aren't you dead? I assume you're loitering around here to learn what efficiency rating I plan to give your cadets.
I am understandably curious.
They destroyed the simulator room and you with it.
Aren't you dead is a funny line, just because a moment ago we saw him fake dead and he got up. And so that's just a funny little line. But in this case, this is also a wonderful callback to the meta of what's going on. And again, I don't like to flag too many of these, but especially in this movie's case, where the death of Spock was reported early and there was a great outrage, a lot of it actually probably created by Gene Roddenberry. We'll get into that later on, where he leaked the fact that Spock was going to die. And by putting this death scene, which moved forward more and more as the development of the script went on, to the very beginning, by Kirk calling it out, it has both the joke of the moment, seeing a person who's supposedly dead now alive, and also calling back to the audience in general. Ha, we tricked you. We got a little trick in on you there. All right, so then we go to the 11-minute mark, where McCoy is dressing down our once again, our kind of maudlin Kirk, who's sitting amongst all of his collection of antiques. And he's just laying into him. He's just laying into him to the point where it's like, wow, you're kind of cutting to the bone there, McCoy. And then that's when Kirk leans back and lays out this line.
Hiding behind rules and regulations.
Who am I hiding from?
From yourself, Admiral.
Don't mince words, Bones. What do you really think?
So in the scene right before that, we're getting to what Kirk's desire is. The Kirk's desire is to once again get away from all of this, get out of this museum that he's crafted for himself, and return to being the captain of the Enterprise, or any ship, basically. That's his desire. You know, when I teach screenplay writing, we talk about a character's desire. And sometimes they are articulated by the actual character, and sometimes they're articulated by a friend or a mentor or whomever, and that is McCoy's job right there. And it's a hard-ass line. It's, who are you hiding from yourself?
You're hiding. Hiding behind rules and regulations.
Who am I hiding from?
From yourself, Admiral.
From yourself, Admiral, not Captain. Admiral, he just sticks it to him, and then Kirk.
Don't mince words, Bones. What do you really think?
Now, this is a funny line, because the gravity of the sentiment shot forth by McCoy just a moment earlier is undercut by this. He's treating it very lightly here and undercutting, because we all know that he wasn't mincing words. So it kind of flies in the face of that. So, but this also speaks to McCoy's power as a confidant in this situation. This joke lets McCoy off the hook a little bit for being a little too hard on his friend. And Kirk knows that. And by joking lightly about it, he's both acknowledging it and also saying, you're a good friend. I'm gonna let this one go. All right, so we get, as I said, there are times when you have comedy, which is just a physical gag or just a joke line. If you think about Star Trek V, when, you know, the infamous scene where Scotty's walking, he says, I know this ship like the back of my hand. And then he bumps into a beam on the ceiling and knocks himself out. That's just pure physical comedy for physical comedy's sake. And it's funny in the moment, but it doesn't really speak to character. I mean, a little bit, but it makes him look like an idiot. We have a little bit of a joke right here when they beam down to SETI Alpha, which is just purely a locational joke. It doesn't have a lot of bearing. And again, it cuts across what's going on in the scene.
Back off. Are you sure these are the correct coordinates?
Captain, this is the garden spot to SETI Alpha 6.
This is the garden spot to SETI Alpha 6. Again, mostly a throwaway joke. It's to kind of underscore how horrible these conditions are. And if this is the best you've got, man, this place really sucks. All right, so let's jump over here to once Kirk lands on, well, he's transported. He's carried to the Enterprise.
I hate inspections.
Oh, we gotta go actually one more minute forward.
Scott, you old space dog. You're well. Yes, we've been through death and life together.
Not bad, pretty good joke. Kind of an aside.
Mr. Scott, you old space dog. You're well.
I had a wee bout, sir, but Dr. McCoy pulled me through.
Wee bout of what?
Surely that was.
Now that's a great classic setup and punchline. I had a wee bout, but the doctor pulled me through. A wee bout of what? Surely. Oh, so that again, one wonderful setup, punchline, hold for laughs, move on. You know, that's such a great vaudeville thing. Maybe just turn on the closed captioning here. So sure, let's turn that on so we can actually see this. But it also pulls back to character as well. That could have been just a throwaway line. He could have said, oh, what happened to this guy? Oh, surely, maybe some drunk ensign rolling around there. But this is about Montgomery Scott, Scotsman, heavy drinker, possible future or past alcoholic. But be that as it may, it returns us back to a memory of Mr. Scott back in the day in the original series. We didn't get that in the motion picture. We didn't get him in the motion picture like drinking, cavorting, and talking about scotch and talking about, you know, about being a Scotsman here. We're going to see him later on playing a bagpipe. We're leaning heavily into his Scottish ancestry in this movie. But this one little joke right here gives us so much.
Death and life together.
And again, a good joke. They've been through death and life together. A little flip on the phrase.
Mr. Scott, you old space dog. You're well.
I had a wee bout, sir, but Dr. McCoy pulled me through.
Wee bout of what?
Surely that was.
I also want to point out, and if you're not watching the video, that's fine. But in this scene, we have a nice flat construction of it. And in comedy, especially if you ever do stage comedy, you want to make sure that you don't have different depths of characters. You don't want to have McCoy like way off in the back, you know, unless you're building the joke around that. But here again, this is almost like they're being on in front of a curtain, vaudeville stage, nice flat characters. They're turning in profile to each other so they can deliver those joke lines, and then they have the reactions, and then they move off. So it's such a perfect vaudeville kind of moment there. And then he moves off, we move on to the scene.
And who do we have?
All right, so let's move on to this. Now, this is a fun little moment here as well, which blends a little bit of character and physical comedy. So Kirk is finally on board the bridge here. He's very excited. Spock's in command, but then Spock gives it off to Savick. And this freaks him out. And you can see his body tense up. It's a bit of physical comedy on William Shatner's part and character comedy too. This is his baby. So we get to see the character tense up.
Take her out, Mr. Savick.
Silver.
Bye, sir.
Kirk. And they pass. Savick passes in front of Kirk and McCoy, and we see the look of concern on both Kirk and McCoy's face.
For everything, there is a first time, Lieutenant. Don't you agree, Admiral?
Mm-hmm. Aft thrusters, Mr. Sulu.
Aft thrusters.
Shatner has a wonderfully underplayed, but we can see his body language is now tensed up. Look at him in reference to Dr. McCoy. Now, McCoy doesn't care as much. He's like, well, this is, at first he was a little surprised, whereas Kirk is concerned. And his concern is still reading in his shoulders. We see that tenseness. He's all, you know, when my kid was learning how to drive a couple months ago, you can bet I was just like Shatner, just sitting there, Kirk. Look out, buddy. You might, oh, turn signal. Yeah, okay. Okay, back off a little bit. I recognize that look. And then McCoy tags it as they go from a wide shot of the four of them into, again, a flat two shot where McCoy turns to him and says,
would you like a tranquilizer?
Head one quarter
and would you like a tranquilizer? And again, Kirk, so tense, quick head shake. No, stop talking to me. I need to concentrate on this. I need to pay attention to this. That tells us about his character and also has a delightful little piece of physical comedy. All right, let's move on to our elevator scene between Savick and Kirk, where they're discussing. Now, Nicholas Meyer changed some of the shots on this. I think he went from single shots to two shots. I think it works fine. But again, she's questioning about the Kobayashi Maru. And again, we're going to call that back later on. But they're having this wonderful little scene set up here. And the third character is being given this wide berth, and we don't know it. It's a great reveal. This is almost like the laugh-in kind of reveal here. Let's watch this. We have a little bit of sexual tension because her hair is down. She's in this kind of weird little, bathrobe thing. I guess she just got out of the shower. I don't know what's going on. It's not a whole lot, but as he makes a little joke, he plays it off because the sexual energy is a little too strong for him, especially in kind of this power dynamic. He backs away from it.
There's no correct resolution. It's a test of character.
May I ask how you dealt with the test?
You may ask.
He's uncomfortable here.
That's a little joke.
Humor. It is a difficult concept. It is not logical.
We learn by doing.
Who's been holding up the damn elevator?
Oh, so good. So good. So for the entire scene, we've had these two characters on opposite sides of this turbo shaft door with no apparent reason. Now, part of it is because they are having a discussion where they are at odds with each other. She doesn't understand anything that Kirk is doing. And he's trying to explain himself while also keeping a respectful distance from a person who is not garbed in the appropriate uniform. That right now she's on her way. I don't know where they have like showers in different. I don't know what she's doing. She's in leisure clothes, Vulcan leisure clothes. So we have this space here, which up until this point in time, we've just assumed is there by coincidence or happenstance. And then in this very understated moment, when he says we learn by doing, boom, those doors open up and we get this perfect shot of McCoy, who's been holding up the damn elevator. It's a great marriage of sexual tension, locational humor, and character humor, all put together. Big laugh every single time it happens.
Thank you, sir.
She walks away.
She changed your hairstyle?
Hadn't noticed.
She changed her hairstyle, hadn't noticed. He did notice earlier. And so we get a little bit of that, and then we get a tiny little callback here.
Wonderful stuff, that Romulan ale.
Wonderful stuff, that Romulan ale. They had a tough night after drinking that Romulan ale, and he kind of shrugged it off. What a masterful little scene, little pocket of comedy we get here as we're moving closer and closer. And again, another flat scene here too, where these two characters are flat, facing profile each other, and then the reveal of McCoy straight ahead. He comes in, and again, they have another flat scene when she leaves with profiles of them looking at each other. All right, onward we go to the talking about the Genesis device and the implications of it. And this is just so good.
Where life already exists.
It would destroy such life in favor of its new matrix.
Its new matrix? Do you have any idea what you're saying?
I was not attempting to evaluate its moral implications, Doctor. As a matter of cosmic history, it has always been easier to destroy than to create.
Not anymore. Now we can do both at the same time. According to myth, the Earth was created in 6 days. Now watch out. Here comes Genesis. We'll do it for you in 6 minutes.
Really, Dr. McCoy, you must learn to govern your passions. They will be your undoing. Logic suggests...
Logic? My God, the man's talking about logic. We're talking about universal Armageddon. You green-blooded inhuman.
Bridge to Admiral Kirk.
So this is such a great scene. Now, first of all, we have this debate over this device, which gives the audience a chance to sort of catch up and have the Kirk-Spock-McCoy dynamic that we've been so missing from the motion picture back on display. The bickering and the banter between the two of them, it's almost like an old couple going at it. It is both juvenile and, you know, old couple at the same time. And it ends with McCoy doing a little bit of name calling. Again, he gets to the edge. He's being kind of beaten by Spock and the logic, and McCoy can't deal with it anymore. And so he reverts back to form, back to his, you know, highly emotional name calling. And then we get cut off. Now, there's a longer sequence of this. If you go back to some of the deleted scenes, there's a few more lines here in this. I think he calls him a hobgoblin or something like that. And it's not necessary because we get right to it, right to the edge of this name calling. And then, boom, we're into the next scene, which is when Khan is showing up. It's a perfect laugh moment there because we don't need to see any more. We don't need to see them argue anymore. It's just getting to that crescendo and then boom, we're out. Perfect. All right, let's go over here. Now, Khan doesn't get a lot of comedy and that's okay because he's the bad guy. But he does get one kind of interesting little comedy pass and it's right here.
Is it possible the comm system has failed?
It would explain a great many things.
They're requesting communication, sir.
Let them eat static.
All right, so let them eat static always got a pretty funny laugh line. It's kind of a play off of, you know, Marie Antoinette's, you know, possibly apocryphal let them eat cake. It's, you know, it's also a little bit of if you lived back then, there was the Kiss My Grits from the show Alice, which was a highly, you know, repeated phrase for a while. You know, it's kind of, you know, kiss my ass, kind of let them eat static. It's just a funny little line. And then he, you know, follows it up with kind of the...
They're still running with shields down.
Of course, we are one big happy fleet. Ah, Kirk, my old friend. Do you know the Klingon proverb that tells us revenge is a dish that is best served cold? It is very cold in space.
All right, and you know, we all know that line there. And if you were in the audience or if you remember that it's probably people that's been attributed to a, you know, Russian proverb, and although the etymology of that phrase is kind of all over the place. But for an audience, it becomes a little of a meta joke as well that he's misappropriate to the Klingons. We'll hear that kind of reiterated again in Star Trek VI. You haven't lived until you've heard, you know, Shakespeare in the original Klingon. So we kind of get that call back. So in this one little instance, we kind of get a little bit of comedy out of Khan, but that's about as much as we get from it. At least intentional. Because then we do get some good reaction comedy for him here. And again, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. But as they're getting ready for, as Kirk is preparing his surprise counterattack.
Is it on target and await my command.
Phasers lock.
Time's up, Admiral.
Here it comes. Now, Mr. Spock.
Sir, our shields are dropping.
Raise them!
Right there. Sir, our shields are dropping. And if you watch Ricardo Montalban, he goes from a big smile to a kind of a medium, kind of confused, and then straight to a bigger look, a bigger reaction shot within about 2 seconds. And it's a perfect little reaction that contains both the character appropriately reacting to it, but also just enough comedy so the audience will get a nice laugh, a nice satisfactory laugh from this bad guy getting his comeuppance. Let's just watch this again here. 69.
Sir, our shields are dropping.
Raise them.
I look back to the control. Raise them. It's just enough so we as an audience see that, oh shit, what just happened? So again, this is not comedy within the scene. This is not comedy that the characters are saying or doing. It's a reaction shot of a character who in the moment is having a genuine panicked reaction. But for us, the audience, from a meta look, it's funny. All right. Let's go over here. This is another funny little moment here. Essentially a great rock in space.
Engineering. Aye, sir. Mr. Scott, do you have enough power for transporters?
Barely, sir.
I'm going down there.
Khan could be down there.
He's been there. Hasn't found what he wants. Can you spare someone? There may be people hurt.
Yeah, I can spare me.
Begging the Admiral's pardon. General Order 15. No flag officer shall beam into a hazardous area without armed escort.
There's no such regulation. All right, join the party. Mr. Spock, the ship is yours.
Jim, be careful.
We will.
A throwaway line, but again, it goes back to character. The bickering, the bantering between the two of them is a lot of fun. I mean, of course, he means all of you be careful. But McCoy just takes that little bit of time to kind of just poke him with that fork because, you know, he said Jim instead of all of you be careful. All right. I wanted to get to this moment here too. Again, this is after Khan's attempt to kill Kirk fails, we get another great reaction plus an insult from Kirk.
Khan, bloodsucker. You're gonna have to do your own dirty work now. Do you hear me? Do you?
Kirk, you're still alive, my old friend.
Still? Old friend. You've managed to kill just about everyone else, but like a poor marksman, you keep missing the target.
All right, so with this, we have, our again, another great reaction by Ricardo Montalban, and just the stunned look on his face, which is so pleasant for the audience. It's such a release that once again, Khan has been thwarted because he's such a worthy adversary. And then Kirk goes one step forward to bait him with this great, great insult. You've managed to kill just about everyone else around. Let's see.
Old friend. You've managed to kill just about everyone else. But
you've managed to kill just about everyone else, which is a funny line because it is, in some ways, it's a little bit of gallows humor. It is sort of like we're making light of this horrible situation where you have killed and murdered everyone on the space station Regular One, and you know you've you know possibly you know you unfortunately Captain Terrell has also been killed as a result, and Chekhov's been injured, and he starts it out. Well, you've managed to kill just about everyone else, but like a poor marksman, you keep missing the target, and Shatner hits that line so perfectly that as the line plays through onto the reaction of Montalban, people are laughing all the way through on this. They're laughing at the first part. You've managed to kill just about everyone else, but like a poor marksman, you keep missing the target. This is almost like a four-beat joke. We get the reaction of Khan. We get you've managed to kill everyone else, which starts the laughter, but like a poor marksman, and then it hits on Khan as he's just absolutely stunned by all of this. It's a great little moment to break up all of this tension, which is happening, which gets us back into that happy place there again. All right, so then we zoom over here. And I debated back and forth on this, on Kirk's reveal of the fact that all of this has been a setup.
Change the conditions of the test. Got a commendation for original thinking. I don't like to lose.
Then you never faced that situation. Faced death.
I don't believe in the no-win scenario. Kirk to Spock, it's 2 hours. Are you ready?
Right on schedule, Admiral. Just give us your coordinates and we'll beam you aboard.
All right. I don't like to lose.
Boom. So again, I kind of went back and forth, but now I'm absolutely 100%. This is when he's explaining to Savick that in fact he had set up this plan with Spock, 2 hours earlier. But this is a perfect punchline delivery. And it's also a callback to the no-win scenario. Now it's more of a joke for the audience, but the way he bites in that apple is perfectly timed. Listen to it.
Give us your coordinates and we'll beam you aboard.
All right. I don't like to lose.
Boom. I don't like to lose. Boom. It's like a half to three quarter of a second beat. And then bite. It's a rim shot. It's a rim shot on. Let's listen.
Beam you aboard.
All right. to lose.
Now, it's not a gaggy joke, but for the audience and for him, it punctuates it. You know, there's a reason why they have rim shots and things like that, because it is kind of the end of the joke. It's the signal, like, ba-boom, this is funny. And for the audience, that also signals to us, this is funny. Even though this is a dire situation, he has a moment to take a bite of an apple right in front of Savage. How do you like them apples? All right. From that point on, we kind of hit a little bit of a comedy desert, which is okay. We're dealing with a lot of hardcore stuff. You know, maybe the Conum laughing at superior intellect, it's a little bit of an insult. It's all right. I don't consider it to be a big, you know, jokey line there. But for the most part, we kind of lay off it because the situation does get there. We are paying the toll for Khan's, you know, malevolence here, which is, you know, the destruction of the Reliant, the death of Spock, you know, Kirk's mourning. It's a lot. And it's one of the things that gives the show so much gravity. Now, if you think back to, actually, if you want to find a comparable in the Marvel films, again, the Infinity War, you know, during the snap, no comedy there. It is so gloomy and so dire. And it's just, you don't punctuate it with comedy at that point in time. You want your audience to feel this, and you don't want to give them an out intentionally or otherwise. And this movie is brilliant in the fact that it gives us no comedy to grab onto. I mean, maybe, I don't know, that weirdo. I always love watching that weirdo in the back who's acting like a drunk man there. Let me see, where is he? Can we get to that? Yeah, let's see. I don't want to. Yeah, we won't find that. But you guys know what I'm talking about. That guy who's the guy who can't stop. This guy right here. This guy who is just, stop moving around, dude. This is a big sad moment. Stop that head. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. All right. Unintentionally funny. We're not going to flag any of those, although that's unintentionally funny. Stop moving. We go through all of this, and it's not until the entire death scene, the entire funeral, that we finally, after all of this, we get let off the hook a little bit. Kirk's trying to read the book. He puts on the glasses. The glasses are broken. Which, again, you're not part of this collection anymore. You're not an antique anymore. And one of the, you must give up things. And part of it was your friendship with Spock. And part of it was acknowledging that, you know, you don't need that anymore. You have moved on here. These antiques, they do not serve you. But of course, then we get this kind of funny bit here where he's trying to read the book and has to stretch it as far as his arms can possibly hold back. He's almost at the end of the book. I just realized that he's almost finished it. I guess he had some time in there to finish it. It's a gentle piece of comedy. It's a nice little bit of physical comedy. It's kind of a concession that he still is getting older, but he's marrying the two. He's willing to put aside all the accoutrement of old age, but he still must yield to the fact that his eyesight's getting a little poorer and he must accommodate for it. And it's just enough of a laugh to get us out there, because for the rest of the film, there's not really any comedy in it, which is fine. It's, you know, it's another, you know, 5 or 6 minutes, but it's just enough of a gentle laugh to remind us that, okay, we know this is hard, but this is still Star Trek, this is still comedy. We can still have a little bit of fun. There are other jokes in this film. I grant you that. And maybe I missed a few. And if so, go ahead and you can go to the Facebook page and tell me what I missed. But those are the big ones. Those are the big jokes, which to me come up at just the right moments. So this isn't some sort of dire submarine, movie, 1940s submarine combat film. This isn't Star Trek, the motion picture, where everything is so serious and so glacial. You know, I was thinking about Robert Wise's other films and, you know, certainly in films like West Side Story and The Day the Earth Stood Still, there is comedy there, here and there for sure. Think about The Professor, you know, when he's doing all his, work on the board and Day the Earth Stood Still. There are moments of comedy. There's not a lot. I don't know how funny Robert Wise is, which is sort of a problem. And if you go 2 years earlier to Star Wars, there's plenty of comedy there. And that's something that everybody in production seemed to forget, including Gene Roddenberry, who was a part of this. And I don't know what happened, but I mean, certainly I know that when he saw a piece of the action, he saw some of the other ones like IMUD, he felt it was getting too comical. And I agree with that. I agree that you can go too far with comedy. Star Trek V is comedy without character. Star Trek IV is a perfect marriage of character and comedy and location and circumstance. Star Trek VI is another pretty good balance. It feels a little too on the jokey side at times. And then if you want to go into some of the Next Generation ones, I'd have to kind of look at them a little closer. But without any comedy, the characters fall flat. We all make jokes, even in the most dire circumstances, especially in the most dire circumstances. We make jokes to cope. And if you have 2 hours of a movie and it is just nothing but staring at screens and staring at Ilea and staring at things and there's no comedy, then the characters become uninteresting and they become as flat as the scenery behind them, and nothing pushes them forward. That's what was going on. That's one of the reasons for me that Star Trek Motion Picture fails, that it's a difficult watch for me because I'm just sitting around saying, man, I don't like these characters anymore. I don't feel any sort of affinity to them. I don't remember them being this sad, this plodding and morbid and just without any sort of life to them. Even in the darkest times, even when everything seems dire around us, we're going to make a joke. So those are my thoughts. Those are my correct thoughts, with all apologies to Tim Greaves for this completely inaccurate Ringer article. More readership doesn't make it right. But it's okay because he was in the no-win scenario and I don't like to lose. There we go. Well, there we are. We move forward. I have my Captain Kirk mug right here. If you're watching the Star Trek Facebook page, we move forward on Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. I found a way to move forward on my podcast and honor my desire to keep on doing it on Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. I'll try to go through the creation, the development of the episode of the movie next, because it really is fascinating, the different twists and turns it took, and Khan at one point in time could affect people's minds. Yeah, we need to stick around for that. But until then, I'm Mike McCafferty, and I just want to talk about Star Trek. Still, old friend.